Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 135. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Mr. Graham Thickens.
Yeehaw! I like that music. That's waking me up this morning.
Yeah, I did that in my garage yesterday with my son and his friends. And Phil Wilson isn't here today because he actually has work to do making money. So he had some imperatives, but oh well. We miss you, Phil. Of course, he probably doesn't listen to this if he's not here. What do you think?
Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah.
Sounds well. Like he was on the road a good part of yesterday, driving back up from Des Moines or something, and so he was running behind with his work.
Right. Well, there's only one major story, and you brought this up to number one, Graham, the stock market, and what's happened after the whole debt debate adventure. And your question about what's the effect on our local community? What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, it certainly hammered some of our local stocks, but you know, I don't really follow such things and don't really care. I mean, to me, it goes up, it goes down, and at best, it's just sport. Kind of watching it. That's the take of a lot of the tech community too. Certainly, the startup community.
Yeah.
Is, you know, as some noted bloggers said this week, is, you know, the startup folks are focused 2 to 5 years out, you know, and they just really don't pay attention to this kind of stuff and can't. Although, you know, certainly one could say it's got to be affecting the folks who are putting money into venture.
That's exactly where I was just going to go because
so-called limited partners have to be getting a little shaky, and it could be said the same thing of angel investors as well. But you know, it's just been a wild ride. I mean, it's kind of leveled out now, hasn't it, for the week anyway, but still down for the year.
Yep.
Yeah. Who knows?
Will it just kind of slow things down for a while, do you think? Or will it cause some companies to not be funded?
Well, you mean like early stage startups?
Yeah.
I really don't think it's going to have an effect on early stage startups. I mean, you know, most of the angels that I know and the VCs, you know, they're not going to let this freak them out and, you know, go suck their thumb in the corner. You know, funding will go on and, you know, innovation is still going to happen and still needs funding. And, you know, so everything, you know, I'm seeing about how things are going, certainly out in the Valley and with the funding resources like AngelList and CapLinked is another one that launched earlier this year, getting angels together with startups. There's a lot of activity going on. And certainly, you know, the VC funding internet companies has been called a bubble by more than one person. There's plenty of money flowing out in the Valley. And, you know, I doubt that the stock market problems are really having an immediate effect on that. Who knows about longer term, but, you know, this may all be just a blip in a couple of weeks that we don't even, you know, talk about anymore.
Yeah. Well, Bill Gross, you know, the famed investor, wrote an article and
which Bill Gross, you mean the Idea Lab guy or the big time private equity hedge fund guy?
The latter, the big time private equity hedge fund guy. Yep. And he wrote an article about the whole debt fiasco and what's happening in the world. And that basically the number one focus has to be on innovation and growth because we're not going to cut our way out of this. We're not going to be able to continue to cut and cut and cut and cut. We've got to figure out ways to grow our economy, because without people spending, you know, if our economy is 70% dependent on consumers, we've got to grow our way out of it. And I think everybody looks for points of acceleration, and, you know, the whole mobile space continues to just light the world on fire everywhere. And you know, in fact, that could be a segue into the other two hot stories.
Well, yeah. Apple and iOS. No.
Yeah, right.
Well, it actually is related to Apple and iOS. And by the way, before we leave your previous thought, there was a great story by, I'm blanking on his name, for info at InfoWorld about how the whole Apple phenomenon has created so many jobs.
Oh, really?
The ecosystem of jobs that have been created, and not just in China manufacturing the doggone stuff, but all the rest of the ecosystem. And somebody did a great study, one of the universities that he was citing, on what the innovation around Apple and, you know, the iPhone and the iPad and it has created. And I'll have to put that in the show links.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But that allows you to do your segue into
the hot apps. Well, and so our pals at Star Tribune did a new iPad app and did a post about it on Monday and had a nice weigh-in in the comments from the senior VP who runs the group that's doing digital. And
Jim Bernard. Former Dow Jones general manager of their local operations here. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, it's really fascinating. Well, first of all, it was delightful that he weighed in. Mm-hmm. And that they are using a local agency, drivetrain agency, to have built the app. I mean, rather than go outside this market. So that was a plus. And it's good to see him in the game in a big way.
Well, you said in your post that, you know, they have a good website now that you can see on the iPad. So why would someone get this iPad app instead if what they deliver through the browser is so good?
Well, I'll tell you the number one reason that I love news apps on the iPad is because I can link out to my social sites and I can link out to Instapaper and save stuff for offline reading.
Yep.
And I can't do any of that with this app. So so for now, you know, I do a 6 of 1, half dozen of the other between the app itself and the website, because the website, I think, looks great on my iPad, works well. And frankly, I like having a front page above and below the fold, because I can swipe and go down and look at what essentially on the website is a front page to the newspaper. And with the iPad app, it's not that. It's section based, which is fine. You still have to categorize and have some kind of a taxonomy for this stuff. But you know, I'm kind of you know, on the fence with respect to how the app is, because the other one that we are going to talk about at length with the CEO of the company that did it for is the WCCO iPad app, which is integrated with social media.
Yes.
And
so they're going to charge for this app, or they're going to charge for the service, I would imagine, for the app. Do we know how much that's going to be?
The Tribune, don't know. They're giving you free use till October 16th, I think. And well, I haven't read what they're going to charge at that point. Have they even announced it?
Well, initially they said $3 a month for a subscription. And now in Jim Bernard's comments, he basically said the jury's out. They're still talking about it.
Ah, interesting.
So we'll see what's going to happen with it.
Well, and then we get into the question of what about us folks who still subscribe to the dead trees version? Do we get a break on the iPhone app or not? Or do we even get it for free?
I would say, Graham, that that's got to be the model. And the reason is that everybody, all the publishers are falling in line with that. I mean, I have a print Wired subscription I've had since day one. So Condé Nast finally set it up so that I could download the magazine and read it on my iPad, which I much prefer. And then Business Week is the same way. Wall Street Journal is the same way. New York Times is the same way. If you get the dead trees version, you automatically get the online one. Oh, and plus, here's a biggie. Because my wife goes by her maiden name for work, and we have two completely different email addresses, she called the New York Times and said, oh, by the way, my husband, his email address is on the New York Times app, and I have an iPad, too, and I want to read it, too. So because we have the same home address, they said, okay, we've just this week changed that ruling and that policy. And so now she's on the on the app, too.
How many do they give you? How many logins or how many different devices can you have the paper on?
Well, with my login, I have it on my MacBook Air. I read it on my MacBook Air through the site itself and then through my iPad and through my iPhone. So I have three devices with one login. But in terms of multiple people, I don't know the answer to that, Tim. But yeah, I think that's the model.
Be a lot.
Yeah. But I think ultimately that's the model is that's really the only, when you think about it, that's really the only way that this is going to transition for those of us that do read Dead Trees versions of stuff. Not necessarily that all of a sudden everybody that's, 30 years old is going to suddenly leap on the newspaper because they have an iPad and it's available. but I think if they tie it into social media in a big way so that articles can be shared, that's how it has to be. I absolutely firmly believe that.
Yeah, I agree. I just absolutely love using Zeit and
me too. Yeah,
Flipboard. I mean, these are the apps I use the most on my iPad,
Zeit's my favorite.
It just keeps getting better, and the way it learns what you like. Oh my God.
Well, you should check out another app. We're digressing here. Sorry, Tim.
News 360. Yep. I'm using it. I actually heard those guys pitch at demo when they first introduced their iPhone app. It's actually a Moscow based startup. But they have some U.S. people too. But yeah, I've had their iPad app, and they just updated it, and it's getting better.
Yeah, it slowed down dramatically, unfortunately, because now they tie it into social media, so they're doing some sort of analytics on what you read and which articles you put on. So then when you launch the app, it's personalized, and plus you can personalize it further by tying it into your Twitter account, Facebook account, and Google account, and so forth. I will say though that most of the APIs that have been set up are passed through credentials, so that the company it's like a credit card, right? If you've got a gateway from your e-commerce platform to the credit card company, there's not a man in the middle. It doesn't stop and store itself on the server. It just passes it through, right? And it's the same thing when you log into Twitter. Especially if News 360 is in Russia, not that the Russians would ever do this, but if there was a way for them to snag this stuff coming through before it got passed to the API, then now all of a sudden they'd have logins for all these all these people, which could be bad.
Yeah. Yep. It's a little uncomfortable dealing with a Russian app. And then Zeit is I think they're in British Columbia, but Flipboard is good old USA.
Good old USA. Well, then
Silicon Valley.
The other app that came out, and we're going to have a guest on, the CEO of DoApp, the company that did it. Graham, thank you for inviting Wade. They did the original WCCO app for the iPhone. And I remember when John Danzer was there running the digital group. Now he's over at Twin Cities Public Television. But when John was there, you guys would agree with this, right? That he absolutely got WCCO in the game in a big way in social.
Yep.
And
sure did.
Boy, I tell you, having that iPhone app, first of all, it was a cool app and it looked good and it worked. But having the ability to tie stuff in, and not only that, but have them be so responsive, because there was a point where the password that I I use. I use ASCII characters in my passwords. And so it wouldn't take special characters. And so it wasn't passing it through to the API. And I had read, I'd experienced that on other apps. And so I pinged John Danzer, who in turn pinged the Do app guys, and Wade reached out to me and said, now what's happening? And they fixed it.
Oh yeah.
You know, so I mean, it's, you know, they're just incredibly responsive, but this new iPad app is free and it's really well done. And I haven't yet done the listen live to WCCO radio, but I'm going to give that a shot. Have you tried that?
No, I haven't tried that yet. That's one feature I haven't tried.
Okay. Okay.
But I played with some of the other stuff. But that's a kind of a neat thing to have in there. And then they've got weather, and they've got their weather blog and all kinds of different stuff in there.
Well, we should bring Wade on. Do you want to just set this up about who this guy is?
Sure. Well, Do App was founded in early 2008 by Joe Shriver, a former Google employee. He was actually, I believe, Google employee number 198. He was their first UI designer.
Wow.
And Joe relocated back here to Minnesota, where he had worked at IBM Rochester. He relocated back here in 05 and launched a startup in 07 that morphed into Do App. And I had the good fortune of working with Joe early on as an advisor, and was actually Do App's first interim VP of marketing.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and Wade and a cohort of his named Dave Barillo, who's essentially the CTO of Do App now, were brought in by Joe Shriver, I believe, in about March of 08. And Wade was ultimately given the CEO reins later on that year, and has been running a real rocket ship ever since. The company, it doesn't have a huge high profile here because they're running so fast and doing so many things. We just kind of pick up snippets here and there, but Wade will be happy to provide a quick overview, I'm sure, of what they're doing with their mobile local news platform.
Yeah, okay.
Which has really been their biggest product, if you will, so far. And then they have a few other initiatives that he can touch on as well.
All right. Well, let's give him a call and bring him on. And all the way down in Rochester. I think Wade?
Yeah.
Hey, good morning.
How are you?
Great. It's Steve, Graham, and Tim. And Phil isn't here because he's goofing around somewhere. So
he's just farting around on a Friday, huh?
That's right.
Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
So, hey, Wade, this is Graham. You're back down in Rochester. I spoke to you. You were in the cities last night when we spoke.
Yep.
But we wanted to get you to a little update on Do App in general, and then move into talking about the new CCO iPad app.
Sure, no problem. And you know, I kind of laugh and I say, has it been over 3 years already?
Yeah.
And amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, and when do you classify not being a startup anymore? Is it when you actually are profitable or what?
When you can make a car payment.
Yeah. Ah, that's it.
That's the acid test.
We're still a startup then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, well, give us a quick overview, Wade, for the folks that don't know. You guys have been in the app business, had apps in the iOS app store for longer than really darn near anyone in town here. Give us an idea of how many apps you have out there and what your main product initiatives are now, most recently.
Sure. You know, when we got started, as you know, we were like everybody else. It was the app on a stick era, right? It was like the state fair. You just go make a bunch of apps and see what users were going to utilize. And we spent that first year doing that. And then really going into year two, we wanted to focus in on different verticals. And we went after three particular verticals. One ended up being healthcare with our relationship with the Mayo Clinic. And then the other one other two that we did was real estate. And that's finally starting to take off a little bit. It's been a lot slower than we thought with that one, but we've got some pretty neat stuff that we've started to roll out. But then obviously Mobile Local News, which was a platform, you know, that we kind of defined out and started to make some easy way for these news properties, whether newspaper, radio, or television, to actually get on mobile very fast. And initially it was, you know, of course, just iPhone. We were very iPhone centric. And then we were one of the first after that to roll out Android. And now we actually support Microsoft, Windows 7. And then we've got a mobile web. We never did do one for BlackBerry because, as you know, we made some pretty bold statements 2 years ago that we thought BlackBerry was going to have some trouble. And lo and behold, it's kind of come to fruition.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, you know, I remember saying to people, they're going to die a death pretty ugly. And people are like, no way. I mean, at the time, it was 68% of the market share. And now they're in their mid to low 20s. And every time, every month that goes by and, you know, somebody can update their phone, you know, because their contract is up, you just see one less BlackBerry user.
Yep.
So we really have, you know, focused on this news thing since year two, and we've grown. I think we've got roughly about 600 apps between the three stores that are in market for, you know, various news properties. It's probably about 50, 60 markets.
Wow.
You know, so it's really been, you know, interesting, and we've learned a lot. We've seen the mobile world change. In fact, without disclosing names of, you know, organizations, we now have quite a few news properties that have disclosed that we are providing more traffic on mobile than they are on their web now.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
That is amazing because it happened. Really, what we've seen is this growth over the last 6 months. You know, Graham, I was talking to you yesterday, and as we added our iPad infrastructure or rolled out, you know, for these eight markets, I had to quickly add servers fast, which surprised me. We had no idea that the number of iPad users were going to jump so quick into starting to use it. So, you know, it's going to create probably some new challenges for us, which is good.
Yeah, you mentioned you're moving to the cloud.
We are.
To Amazon, huh?
We are. We're starting to do a lot of migration over to that. You know, I think what happens, and every company probably does this, when you build, you know, you think you build to scale, but you don't build to scale. So we started to realize about 6 months ago that, you know, when we had a few incidents where the 2010 elections, that election night was a rough night, brought our servers down. And we learned a lesson that way, but that migration has been a little slower than we wanted to. But, you know, we're moving pretty good now, and so we'll be completely over here in the next all 3 or 4 months. Yeah. It's just not easy to do because once you have something, you know, and you've written it for a certain way, you've got to make that migration over. But that'll help. And you know, the whole cloud concept is going to help because as we can spin something up really fast if we get that growth. And as you know, the 2012 election is already...
Yep.
Getting ready, and so that night is going to be interesting. I won't sleep that night, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Why do you think people are going to pay attention?
Oh my goodness! And you know what's funny, Keith? This is what we saw though. People were watching TV, but they kept pinging for the results on the mobile phone.
Right.
That's what I've realized now is this little device is just becoming that thing, an appendage that, you know, people are going to maintain and use all the time. So.
Your second brain, yeah. Is this iPad app, Wade, your first real launch of any iPad apps, or had you guys done any before this?
Had we simultaneously were doing one for real estate, and so
you were okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I will say that this was our first that we released.
I see. Okay.
We went back, and it's interesting. We've learned a lot about the news industry. And the challenges that on the back end and how they manage all of their stuff, you know. And so when we did our first mobile local news, and, you know, we were pretty proud of it back then and how it worked and how it scaled and, you know, the reviews we got from properties using it, saying this is what we wanted, something that's easy to use, you know, on the back end, and we can integrate, make changes on the fly. And it's kind of a mobile CMS.
That's what I was going to ask you that. Yeah. If it was, you know, how to feed all of the, because if I'm at WCCO, I mean, how do I feed a story and have it automatically present itself? You know, because that's the beauty of a CMS, content management system, is you separate presentation from the content.
Yeah.
And is that the same concept?
It is a little bit in a sense that what we're doing is we're pulling from feeds, or we're using like load URLs. We have all kinds of functionality in our backend, but we're not replacing their entire CMS. Partly because what we've learned is, you know, if I come in, most of them already have CMS systems, and you know, there are times when we've said, forget it, let's go make a CMS.
Yeah, right.
But then we've also, you know, said to ourselves, be careful what we ask for here, you know, and decide to do, because then you create a whole new level of support you have to do. So,
oh God, yes.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. I've seen a lot of transformation in that CMS industry, and I've seen a lot of news properties even going to open source solutions. We have some clients that are on WordPress, you know, really managing their thing around there, and you know, whether it's that or Joomla or other stuff out there. So it's a variety. And the way we really do is we pull it through feeds, we pull it through, you know, we have some load URLs, we do some scraping, we've got some pretty unique technologies that are all built around that. And then we have some things we've built in. We built in our own weather, our own traffic. But yeah, really the funny thing about this iPad transformation, getting back to your question, Graham, which was we realized some of the design flaws that we know about that are sitting there in the iPhone version and the Android version. We wanted to be sure that we built the iPad version to be different in regards that it can support some of those things. And we are going back in our iPhone version and our Android version over the next 8 to 10 weeks. We'll start to look exactly like our iPad version. So they're going to have similarities. We're going back to this front page design, where you land, then you decide where you want to go. And when you go in there, then we have the subcategories and, you know, adding some features that we've long needed in our iPhone. You know, there's some things we did really great in the iPhone version, but it's starting to look like a dated design.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you gotta update, right?
Sure. Say, I talk about the other markets that are live right now. I mean, CCO is just one of your markets where you have the iPad app out there. What are some of the other ones?
Yeah, it's interesting. In Minneapolis, we have two. We have the St. Paul Pioneer Press,
and then
we've got WCCO. And you know, take a look at both of them. They both have done a good, really good job. And it's interesting to see our platform used a little differently between both, because a newspaper, you know, obviously delivers sometimes longer stories. They utilize, you know, some different things. And that's what was great with this update. We really provided some different things that worked well. Like we have something called video player, and then we have video story. Well, the video stories are probably catered more towards newspapers who have a long story, and then they might have additional video. So when you tap that, like a photo, then it'll play that way. But the video list player is really built for, you know, those broadcast-centric ones that have a lot of video. And then they might have only just a paragraph to describe that story. So we thought through, you know, the different media entities or the different, you know, news release stuff and really trying to maximize that experience. But so we've got two in Minneapolis.
Well, St. Paul, two.
One in Minneapolis.
Two in the Twin Cities, yes.
Twin Cities, I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean to make anybody mad across the border, so I will be all inclusive.
Yeah.
So we really focused on some other markets, one being to roll out in our initial release. We've got Phoenix, we've got Dallas, Houston. Of course, I'm pulling this off of my head here, guys. St. Louis, Milwaukee. Yes, Milwaukee was another one. Las Vegas. We have two properties that went live in Las Vegas. And what's interesting about this is we really went back and thought long and hard of what people want to do with an iPad and what experience on an iPad will be different than a mobile phone. And we have some really interesting data that we've obviously collected over the last couple of years, one being time in app. And time in app with a mobile phone is about 3 to 3.5 minutes max in any session. And that was really important for us to know that it was almost like, I always joke and call it toilet time. You know, it's toilet time reading when you're on your mobile phone. But in, you know, since we released just, you know, a few days ago, we've seen right now time an app to be anywhere from 14 to 17 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
That's amazing. Yeah.
So
that's,
of course,
that, you know, that's more akin to toilet time.
Yeah, I guess so.
Three and a half minutes. I'm like, what the heck?
Yeah, no. Exactly.
Yeah, it's more. Yeah, iPhone is more like standing in line time. You know,
snippets of articles. Yes.
Yeah.
It's always that quick downtime. And what I've learned, you know, again, we don't have long information yet and data, but with that, it really validates that what we've thought is they're going to immerse themselves in the experience a little bit more. So therefore, we think things like, which have always been low, watching video on news on mobile right now has been extremely low. People don't realize that. I mean, it's less than 2% of our traffic. Hmm. But with the iPad, we think it's higher.
Yep.
And part of it is we heard people say, I asked why they don't watch video, and they said, well, I'm in a public place. I don't want to run it, you know, where maybe this iPad is going to be something that I'm sitting at home and I'm experiencing it with coffee, and I'm actually trying to experience that consumption piece.
Sure, you know? Curled up on the couch or whatever. Yeah. I mean, but that adds to your bandwidth and your server load big time, right?
Yes. Suddenly, you know, you don't have people coming and going. Now you have a problem where they're experiencing, you know, and staying. So, you know, that creates a unique challenge, but it creates a unique opportunity. You know, there's more ad relationship.
There you go.
And some other things, which are
much
good.
Much more engagement. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Right. Which will be much richer. But we're, you know, I'll tell you what. We know that this was the first version to put out, and there's bugs. You know, there always is, and we always want feedback because we want to improve it. But we're pretty proud of what we come up with because we really pinpointed and did a lot of research around what consumers are longing for. Mm. And, you know, so far the feedback has been good overall, which is great, you know.
And most of your customers, your media outlets that are using this iPad app are offering it for free, right? I mean, that none of them are using a paid model, I assume?
Yes. I will tell you, I've been very, very opinionated and bullish about my thoughts towards this. and we do have some properties that have definitely pushed and that they want some sort of paywall infrastructure. We as a company have chosen not to do that. Okay. We will not support that at this point. We feel that the data is really going to show that that's going to be a short-sighted view on folks, partly because what I've seen is the opportunities for others to try to just aggregate and grab that. In order for a paywall to really work, and we all know this, is, you know, everybody would have to shut them off and they'd have to put them all behind a paywall. And it's just never going to happen. There's always going to be somebody rogue that doesn't do it. So it's always going to create an opportunity. And I say this kind of lightheartedly, but I do indicate this to news properties, is I say, you're dealing with the generation that you want to capture in news. You're dealing with them, that group that actually grew up stealing music. So keep this in mind,
right,
that
right.
They don't even pay for entertainment and things. And now you're going to want to ask them to pay for news and information. And I said, and that's true. It's a challenge. Because they don't see it that way, and they say everything is accessible in some way or the other without a cost. So and there's no doubt that a paywall would work for a certain age demographic, but over time it'll start to dwindle. And, you know, I don't think that that's really the answer. So we've just made a decision from a cost perspective. We're not doing it. If apps wanted to charge a single price, we promote that to say that's fine. But we don't think that this paywall infrastructure is going to be really something that will take off well.
Well, yeah. And this brings us to your ad platform that's part of your whole mobile local news product, right?
Correct.
I just clicked on an ad in the CCO app for an Orbitz hotel app.
Right.
And I just clicked and downloaded that. Tell us about Ad-A-Go-Go.
Yeah. So what we've got with that, in fact, if you download the Pioneer Press one, they've been running home furniture is the first advertiser that's running in there. And I would tell you, it's a great experience. We're backfilling with some. But Adagogo is an ad platform / soon to be network. The platform was really built for the properties and stations to use it to put ads in that they sell, and then they get this optimized experience so they can sell across all their mobile. We've been backfilling it with other ad networks as everybody else has, but we're finally now growing up enough that we're going to be starting to do our own national sales with that, and that we deliver Adagogo national sales. And then we'll have a self-serve component, you know, cross our fingers that rolls out. So
what will you do? Partner with some national rep firm, you mean?
We will. Partly because it's just hard to gather up enough sales team to really do it. Yeah. So we've got a few that we're going to partner up with.
Sure.
And utilize that. And we'll try a little bit ourselves. But, you know, because we do have some relationships
sure.
and things. But the one thing that's really valuable with this is the ad experience that we have. In fact, if you go to Pioneer Press and you see the home one, it's a pretty good ad when you click it. We've got some really cool call to actions and stuff. We got things like deliver digital coupons and things. And this has been something that's really been, we feel pretty passionate about, because we feel like the mobile ad space has been somewhat underserved in the experience. And we feel like we've done some things right there, but it'll empower in the case of, you know, CCO and Pioneer Press, they can go around and actually sell ad spots that are good placement, and that are going to be what I call good experiences for the end user. You know, right now we have the leaderboard at the bottom initially, and we've talked about actually removing that on the front page. It might end up being one of the 300 by 250s boxes instead, and kind of blend it more. Because we have interstitials and other things that blend real well. But right now, it's funny, the IAB, which is the, you know, the consortium for, you know, the standards for ads, they're 2 or 3 years behind. And so the challenge is everybody's trying to cram the web ad types right into the tablet and the mobile. And it's been a challenge. It's been a huge challenge.
Well, one of the things that I'm curious about is, now that you have the opportunity to know more about each of us than ever before, you know, the Holy Grail as the web really started to hit in the early 2000s was personalization and, you know, tracking and so forth. And of course, we know all the issues with tracking. And so there's this fine line between privacy and personalization. But now you have the opportunity to know so much. How are you figuring out where that sweet spot is for your ad network and your customers that are building these apps and delivering these apps, and what to take and what not to take, and how to deliver personalized advertisements to a certain demographic or not? Are you building that kind of analytics in and ad serving delivery?
It's a great question, Steve. Yeah, and we are. You know, Adagogo right now, today in market, can geolocate, you know, really pretty much down to a block radius. So the geolocation cool. function, we've really got it down pat. The next component really comes down to the type of personalization. And you know, as you've mentioned, there's a very lively debate about what we're allowed to know and not know from users.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. And it's interesting because it's like everybody can post everything on Facebook about themselves, but then they don't want somebody to utilize that to create an advantage for you know, personalizing an ad, although it's been being done. I mean, if you're sitting there on Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, any of them, you'll notice a pattern of things that are relevant to, you know, your values, your industry, or so forth. So that graph we are starting to build up. One of the things we did from the start was the geolocation component, because we felt like that was pretty relevant. Some of the data that we collected and read about was that about a little over 50% of people do, most people do over 50% of their common transactions within a 5-mile radius of where they work and where they live. And, you know, so that really hit us saying, this is where geolocation does become important, because...
I missed that. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry to interrupt. What percent?
So over 50% of your transactions...
Yep.
Are accounted for within a 5-mile radius of where you work and where you live.
That makes perfect sense. Yep.
So what we started to realize is this is a new mail order system, really. I mean, if you think about it, bulk mail, or, you know, the mail orders that you do, these mailers that people send out, you know, are really based on certain locations. And we said, you know, why can't we do this really essentially in real time? Ads should be relevant to where people are. So that was kind of the first phase. We know now that we're going to add those personalization components because people are starting to get to the point of saying, hey, I'm not afraid to tell you what I'm interested in. You know, and obviously you see a lot of web ads asking that. What are you interested in more? I think I see that in Hulu now. And then you get a choice of ads. So there might be some of that that actually starts to exist on our part. And, you know, so, yeah, we're going to build it up. Obviously, with the login of Twitter and Facebook in there, we kind of know who you are if we really want to start turning that on. We really want to be protective of that a little bit, just because of the lively debate, and, you know, and sometimes I almost feel like people don't understand what information they're giving. They don't even realize that. So, you know, so I always say you make something idiot proof, they make a better idiot, right? Well, guess what? You know, we've got this scenario here of people will say, I've been giving all this information away to all my friends, but I didn't realize everybody else can see it. So it's a lively debate. The net of it is we do offer some of that customization in there, and we're pretty excited about what we're going to do around that. But part of it is we're kind of waiting to see what really happens with the legal and the legislation stuff
right.
going down the chute.
Well, what do you see happening with the Android tablet market? Do you see it becoming more popular, or is the iPad, you know, kind of the only tablet in town?
Great question. You know, you go to a Best Buy or somewhere else, and there's a whole lot of Android tablets now. And everybody's really getting into the game. I think I get an email a day from all these tablet providers wanting us to put it in their Android store. I think what's really happening though, Tim, is you've got this problem with fragmentation that's going on in the mobile space. And what I mean by that is we right now support over 262 Android devices. And what I mean by that is those are different hardware devices that have pinged our news platform today. And those are all different flavors. In fact, I think we've counted 34 or 35 different OS flavors of those 200.
Oh, wow.
So this reminds me of Nokia. Remember when Nokia had these, I don't know, the Nokia whatever 90 phones or whatever. They all had these different variations, and it becomes a fragmentation problem. Having said that, that really provides an advantage for Apple because, you know, at some point you walk in there and you're just like confused. You know, what is Android Froyo? What is Android Gingerbread? What is, you know, what are all these things? And you can go to Apple and it's one real product. So I do believe right now that the iPad market, and based on what we've seen just the last couple of days, there's a lot of them out there and they're being used. So I think that there's opportunity, but, you know, think about it. You walk in, and I hear a lot of people asking me this question. I want to get a tablet, you know. So should I do this? What should I get, an Android one? I'm not sure. And it always comes back to a good experience there. That's, you know, with the iPad, you know. And so I do believe the iPad's going to own the market, partly because they also own right now the supply chain. You know, Tim Cook is a very smart guy, former IBMer.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Yes, he is. And you know,
did you know him when you were with IBM?
I had never met him personally, but I do know that, you know, he was really the head of fixing a lot of supply chain issues that were there at IBM. And one of the things, he's taken that same really, you know, methodology and took it to Apple. And, you know, you guys remember when the iPod came out and the iPod dominated the market, it wasn't just because the fact that they were the only iPod or MP3 player in the market. It was because they actually went and bought up all the materials in the market that could do what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they're doing the same thing right now. You noticed for a year.
Especially with flash RAM. Yeah.
Bingo. Flash RAM. And the other thing was 10-inch screens
right.
were really hard to find. Now they're starting to come up. But Apple really bought all those things. And they bought the suppliers. So it's all about, you know, a competitive landscape. So because of that, what you're going to see is the iPad's still going to dominate and be a little bit ahead. And, you know, the funny thing is I look and go, so all these people are focusing on hardware functions like USB connection and all these other, USB memory card connection and all this other stuff. Most people don't even care about that. And that's the thing, that they need to get away from that and focus on the experience piece more than anything. And I think if they do, they'll compete. People will buy Android devices, the ones that like have a personal, you know, hatred towards Apple, you know. It's funny, in our team, all of our heavy developers, they all carry Android phones. Why? Because really? They're programmers. They love to play with that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Anybody else will carry the iPhone, partly because it's ease of use. And so that's really, I think, the key with the tablet side. I believe right now, the next 18 to 24 months, it's going to be very, very dominant iPad. And then you talked to me in 2013, will it be fragmented at that point? But it comes down to a price point. If I'm going to pay $500 between two devices, I'm going to get the better one. If I'm going to pay $199 or $99 for an Android one and it's a $300 difference, then people will make a decision on that, you know? So.
And you don't think that's going to happen sooner rather than later?
Well, I there's a lot of them out there right now. So, you know, but I'll tell you that I don't think you're going to see any needlepoint change until sometime in 2012 for Apple's iPad. You know, and it depends what they release this fall. They're going to do an update to the iPad. What is it really going to be? And Apple always has been pretty strategic about just one little update. So the next question is, what can they do on this iPad that really makes people ooh and ah? And, Apple's notorious for doing something that, you and I are like, we've been waiting forever for, and then people almost get really excited about it. It's like they can stand there and say, they put in a camera, which a lot of them had cameras already, you know, the front end camera, and they'll be like, but we made the front end camera better.
The only thing they could do is,
like a Retina display. And how would that change from a development perspective, your view of the platform?
Oh, I'll tell you, I'll be straight honest. If they do that, I'm already going gray pretty fast. My hair will just fall out because that will be a challenge. As a consumer, you sit and go, man, I can't imagine having on this little tablet, basically a full screen HD, 47-inch TV in my face. But the problem with it is the content providers cannot even keep up right now. I mean, we have issues with content photos being only like 400 by 500. So we've had to start to scale down that for these providers. So if it doubles, I don't know what's going to happen. We'd have to revamp everything. So it would be problematic, hugely problematic. And the bandwidth now to pull across the web would be even harder. Because the other thing you have to remember is these are underperforming computers is really what these devices are. So suddenly now they've caused a backlog of the fact that the connection speed wouldn't even be able to keep up. So if they do that, we do see a problem. I suspect that they won't this go around. I do believe they'll do it probably in one of the following ones though. So, but we have not been kind of privy to prepare. We haven't seen anything in the iOS 5 to indicate anything like that either. So we would think that we might get an inkling of that a little sooner. But you never know. They surprise.
Yeah.
They definitely surprise. I believe that the next focus on iPad for them is about integration to being, tied with their AirPlay and
iCloud.
Yeah, well, the iCloud is going to be really one of their focuses, and then Apple TV. I believe that Apple TV is going to become a game console of some sort, and it's going to be tied to using iPad and the devices to communicate. I think that's their solution of doing some of that stuff. They're going to try to get rid of the whole idea that your iPad needs to even plug into your TV at all. You know what I mean? It's going to be that it's air done. In fact, with ours, we do that today. If you guys have heard of Air Server before?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you run Air Server now, it's great. Within our news app, if you're watching a video, you can tap Air Server and run that video right on your computer or right on your TV if you've got a Mac Mini or you've got, anything like that. And we see that integration Apple's going to implement all over. The fact that you can just display stuff on the bigger displays. It's almost like your TV is just going to become a big display unit.
Or you can pause something and move from Apple TV to Apple TV.
Yeah.
Which is another biggie.
Exactly. I mean, that continuous computing thing. In fact, I bought this Discovery Channel's Shark Week app, which I thought was fantastic. So basically what they did was they took their Shark Week content and put it in an app in a way that you know was kind of easy to use and more of discovery, right? But what was funny was I sat there with my children and I tapped it, and then I would hit the AirPlay video and show the video up on our TV. So the kids would watch it that way.
Did they get scared of the sharks?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no. They're obsessed with it now, and they've asked way too many questions.
By the way, do sharks know it's their week?
Self-proclaimed. We want a week. Now you can have dolphins and whales and everybody else fighting that they want a week too. So.
Wade, we could probably talk forever. You're just a font of knowledge and experience, but we probably should try to draw it to a close here and let you get on to your busy day. But we do appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on.
Yeah, always good to talk to you guys, and we'll have to get together again soon. And So thanks for the time, guys.
Thanks, Wade. Say hi to Joe and Dave and the rest of the guys.
I will. Thanks, Graham. Appreciate
it. Okay.
Take care.
Talk to you later.
Yep, be well.
Bye. Well, he is a font of information.
Oh, yeah, he's just a firecracker, I'll tell you. It's good to get an update from him. They've been busy.
Well, it's nice to get an update from somebody who's, you know, completely in the game. And really jamming, but we went a little bit long, so let's just talk about upcoming events, and then we'll have to bring it to a close. I want to mention that the next 2 weeks are going to be a little challenging for all of us with respect to doing a gang podcast with travel schedules and all that kind of stuff, and we've always taken a summer hiatus. This time though, remember, I mean, it's just been so incredible. There have been so many developments and so many things happening this summer that we've had no shortage. We could have done 2 shows a week.
Yeah.
I think we'll be waiting until the Friday after Labor Day. And I know you can't make it for that one, Graham, but I think we'll go on hiatus here for 2 weeks.
Well, I could try to do it from the car or something, but it might be hard.
Yeah, we give it a try, but
yeah. So we're going to do a little sort of a European vacation thing. The August thing.
Yeah. Because like a lot of European countries just take the month of August off, but we don't. We're working the first 2 weeks, aren't we, guys?
Oh yeah.
Till next week.
That's right.
Yeah, next week we're over in Paris. So
excellent.
Yourself. One of these times we're going to be able to do one of our podcasts from Coco, Minneapolis.
That's
from the
right.
Grain Exchange.
That's
be cool.
We are going to try that today, but the room that we need to be in, because we do need to be in a somewhat closed space, because it really is echoey in there. It's just a gigantic facility.
It's like a big gymnasium. It's such high ceiling. I wonder how high those ceilings are. They got to be 20 some feet high.
Maybe 30, and then wood floors. And, with Tim, you know, screaming all the time, I have to make sure the microphone's back.
Right,
Tim.
Absolutely.
Hey, we could always go into those old phone booths, those little phone booths. We could each go in there and get on Skype. No.
Yeah, right. I was thinking you were going to say all three of us could get, or all four of us could climb into one of them. No.
Yeah, no. That would make a funny
That would
photo.
Be scary. Okay, so August 26th, mini barbecue is going on.
Yeah, and, On Friday night.
Yeah, that should be a good time. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to give a heads up that you're coming.
But start your day at Social Media Breakfast.
Social Media Breakfast. Oh, that's that morning. That's right. With Lee Oden. He is, for those of you that don't know Lee, he is a guy that you need to follow if you have any interest whatsoever in social media, but not just interest in social media, but how to actually use it and use it right, and how to do analytics around it. And really it's all about effectiveness. And he's not, even though they're sort of positioning him as a social SEO guru, I think that's doing him a disservice, because he's much, much more than that. And he's going to be the guy for this Social Media Breakfast on August 26th at 8 a.m. I'll put a link in the show notes to that too. And then Graham, Tim, our buddies, Minnesota Cup.
Yeah.
I'm excited for a week from today. They're going to name the finalists.
Right.
Which, and I don't know what time of day that will come out, but yeah, and then they move on to the finals, the awards event itself on Thursday, September 8th, 5 to 7 p.m. at the McNamara Center at the U.
The Alumni which Center, which is a beautiful, that's a great spot for it.
Oh, yeah. And there are some really, really excellent companies among the, I think, 47 semifinalists. I've had the good fortune to get to know a few of these firms that I didn't know already. And it is one heck of a competition this year, let me tell you. There are so many great companies. It's almost going to be a shame that only, three in each of the six divisions. So I guess that will mean there'll be like 18 finalists named this coming or a week from today, the 19th.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah, it's tough. I'm glad I'm not a judge.
Oh gosh. Yeah. It's got to be really, really, really hard.
Yep.
Yeah. But I will surely be there, as you guys will too, I'm sure, on September the 8th. I guess there's no other event in between now and then. That's the next big gathering.
For Minnesota Cup, that's right.
Right,
that's
for right. Minnesota Cup, right.
Yep. And then we'll do some kind of a post on the 19th when we find out.
Oh, sure, yeah. We'll get an early heads up, hopefully.
Yep. All right. Well, we hopefully Phil will be pleased that we didn't talk about him behind his back, abuse him over the podcast airwaves.
Other than Wade accusing him of farting around on Friday, you mean?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Playing hooky, which he is definitely not.
No. All right. Well, thank you everyone for listening. And thanks gentlemen for being on the Men of Faith Gang podcast.
Yeah. Have a great weekend, guys.
Yep. See you in September.
Bye-bye.